Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dad Son Revolution podcast. This is Brush.
This is Raven.
And we're back with you on the day after Election Day. And we will be exploring a little bit about what's going to be facing us over the coming 4 years, some of the feelings that come up, and some of what we can do about it.
Yeah, talking a bit about the tech worlds and the tech bromanosphere.
Yep, which is going to have a big impact and is a big part of why Trump did so well yesterday. So stay tuned, and we are going to be right back with you in just a moment.
Yep.
All right, Raven, here we are. We're back. It's now the day after the election.
And the results are in, and Trump won.
Trump won, indeed. It was there were three possibilities, and it actually turned out to be a bit of a red wave, huh?
Which is, he won almost all the swing states. That's crazy. I can't believe people would vote for this guy.
Yeah. Well, that's actually something to really sit with and try to understand, right? Go ahead.
Yeah, I can understand, like, some people like might like him, but so many people, like 77 million people, think he's a good thing for our country. I just think that's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, this is a moment where the kind of almost, people have called it tribal. It's a kind of an interesting term to use, but the splits between people who are strongly pro-Trump, strongly excited about this sort of disruption of the liberal elites versus people who are just horrified and shocked and deeply frightened, right? It's really, really stark. And that's one of the symptoms, is that it's hard to even believe or understand how people could do that, right?
Yeah.
What was it like in school today?
A lot of people had some feelings. The teachers didn't talk about it much, except a physics teacher, obviously. They talked about it some, but...
Why do you say obviously?
Oh, no. And obviously does not actually... Not obviously does not. They talked about it, but no one else really. But yeah, it's crazy. Kids definitely had a lot of thing. It definitely, yeah. A lot of the femme-appearing people had seemed to felt more strongly about it.
Yeah. And why do you think that is?
Most maybe because they're like more in tune with their emotions, and also because they might be... Since Trump is known misogynist, yep. It probably has a more direct effect,
right,
on them.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously, Trump himself is unlikely to, you know, affect most people. But it's a little bit of a sort of license, isn't it? You know, I think it enables a sense of impunity for a lot of kind of behavior that for a while was looking like it might become kind of widely understood as just not okay.
And now. President of the United States is doing it, and people are like, oh, look, it's a great thing to do. The president's doing it, so we can do it. Woohoo!
Yeah. What do you think is, what's an appropriate way to respond to that?
Which part specifically?
To respond to a situation in which there's now kind of this license for misogynist behavior.
Don't let people get away with it just because they see someone's in power. And just because someone's in power to, like, still punish people, still be like, hey, you can't do that, you shouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, still go after people, just because this random person in power, still, it can do it, doesn't mean it's okay to do.
Right. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that sometimes when there's success at the level of the power structures, whether it's court cases or being in the news or even laws or things like that, sometimes people... start to rely on that rather than the sense that it's actually up to all of us how we interact with people. It's up to all of us how we are feminist, how we are rooted in a sense of everyone's dignity, right? And especially around intimate relationships. Like, that's something that if there's anything that the government shouldn't be involved in, it's that, you know? It's like, that's up to us. That's up to us to create with each other. Do you think there's some sense of that among young people, at least in your school?
I don't think so. Maybe I'm not in the right circles or not looking into it. I'm not very good at reading social cues, but I haven't seen anything like that specifically.
Yeah. Well, maybe, you know, one of the silver linings of a moment like this, because I think that's a worthwhile thing to look for, is to understand, as we've talked about last time, how we can act in a situation that can feel really imposing. Is like, people might recognize that we need to do that ourselves, right? Like, that might be something that people can organize around immediately in the school. Yeah,
maybe. I don't know. I don't know if there's much school organizing going on, which sort of sucks.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it is. Well, it's pretty liberal. It's a pretty liberal school.
Yeah. What does that mean? I know that during 2020 there was quite a bit of organizing during the uprising.
Well, I wasn't there in 2020, but yeah, I just, it's a pretty rich part of the city.
Yeah.
And so it's probably a lot of liberal elite, not elite, poor, like middle class, upper middle class people that sort of are all in on Kamala Harris, and mm-hmm. now they're not like, oh, well, dang, we'll get him next time. So it's sort of like the get him next time vibe I was talking about last time.
Yeah.
Sort of like that.
They're kind of just falling back into just, we'll just have to grin and bear it.
I don't know, maybe, but that's just sort of, that's at least sort of like the demographics of the places I know.
Yeah. What has it been like for you, just as a little bit of an aside, I mean, but I think this relates to some of the larger questions we're going to touch on, is what's it like for you being a kind of poorer working class kid in a more upper middle class school, public school?
People have a lot of money. People can just do things with money.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dang.
Yeah. It kind of changes your perspective on what's possible and also what's needed. It's kind of like a buffer, right? For a lot of people.
Yeah, they're like, oh, what? Like, I heard something about like having a car lined up when they turn 16, and I was like, dang, you could have. Mm-hmm. Or like, talk to college, like, oh, my grandparents have a college fund, I'll just pay for it. And I was like, dang, what?
Right.
Y'all don't have to worry about college and school, student debt and stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that there's sometimes a way in which it's that sort of, in terms of trying to understand why people were supporting Trump, right? I think that, you know, if you look at some of the rhetoric, if you look at some of the exit polling and that sort of thing, it's both economic issues in terms of people just feeling like they're not in such a great place economically, but it's also resentment, right? It's like resentment about rich people being able to do whatever the heck they want and being able to, you know, tell everyone else that they have to speak the right lingo, or they need to, you know, be able to kind of have the right education in order to kind of be a good person. Yeah. And a lot of working people are just like, that's not realistic for us.
Yeah, but reference is that Trump is sort of the epitome of a rich person that can do whatever they does whatever they want, says whatever they want because they have money.
Right.
Sort of like the epitome of that.
Then it's true.
So it is him a being paradox. Like him being the demagogue of the people that are against that or are resentment against that seems sort of like counterintuitive.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that there's a lot about this that paradox or contradiction is inherent to what makes it work somehow. And that is this old dynamic of people looking for somebody who is a member of the elite because they feel really disempowered, right? It's the sort of working class resentment that Trump is mobilizing is not actually a form of solidarity. It's not saying, hey, we can get together, we can organize in our workplaces or in our communities.
Yeah, it's sort of like, hey, I am the big, strong person that will take, and you have to follow me because I am good and powerful.
Right.
And I have the power, I have the resources, you just have to follow me and...
Right.
Very sort of like authoritarian in that way.
Right. It's
like, I am the great, you get the people behind you and shove.
Yeah. It's the savior model.
Yeah.
You know, or the warlord that will protect you. And all you have to give up in exchange is your freedom. Yeah. And, you know, and I think that dynamic is something that, people are latching onto. But we're now in a moment in which, you know, a lot of those things that you were talking about yesterday are going to start to be put into motion. We don't know exactly how many or in what ways.
Maybe we have some time. We have until January.
To do what?
To hopefully prevent against the worst, build up networks to prevent against the worst that could happen.
Yeah.
Maybe Biden will do something to set up some sort of protection before he leaves. I don't know. Maybe.
What sort of thing would you imagine?
I don't know. Uh-huh. But if you can actually do anything,
right?
Anything via executive order, because nothing's going to pass through Congress. But maybe something with executive order he could try to do to shore up some protections before Trump comes. But I don't know about that. I'm not a political analyst.
I think that that's politically challenging for a couple of reasons, one of which is that there's actually a kind of rule that's been instituted for a while that an incoming president can undo anything that the previous president put into place within the last, is it 6 months or something like that?
That sort of makes sense, but still annoying.
It's still, it makes sense. You know, it's part of this dynamic that there's a long history. Fascism can come into power in multiple ways, and one of those ways that's happened multiple times is by, is through the electoral machinery means. of elections. And, you know, I think that ultimately what that points to is that there's something very, very fragile, or and not in a good way, about electoral democracy, about liberal democracy. It's something that is not really rooted deeply in everyday people making robust decisions with each other and organizing. It's like, ultimately, it's, you know, a bunch of TV ads combined with somebody, you know, marking a square on a scan sheet, right? It's very flimsy. And so what we need now, the only sort of resistance, is not really going to be Biden. It's going to be people. It's going to be people making it very difficult for the negative sorts of deportations and impacts on trans folks, on women, for abortions and in other ways, and, you know, not all of us, on political organizers. It's going to take all of us to defend against that.
Yeah.
How does your energy feel? You look a little bit...
I'm tired. It's been long. It's crazy. It's just... Oh, my gosh.
How are you... What does it feel like to look forward to the next 4 years of high school?
And Trump presidency.
Yeah.
It's going to be wild, man. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah. What do you foresee in some of that wildness? What kinds of potential...
Maybe some kids will get me politicized.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have some... bring some people over to the cause.
Yeah.
Get a sort of, like, you know... Some people might start doing... Some more political actions might start happening because people are like, we gotta do something.
Yeah.
We can't just sit here and wait. We can't just sit here and sit around and be sad while all our rights are taken away from us systematically.
Right. I think that's true. I mean, we certainly saw that in 2016, right? And I think that was more of a shock.
This was more expected, or more, at least less completely like, what? He won? What?
Yeah.
More of a, oh, yeah, he won. That sucks.
This time it's more familiar. I mean, I think maybe there's more resignation, potentially, which might mean that we see a little bit less activity, but... I think there are a lot of people that are going to be looking around being like, what do we do? How do we react to this? And I think that one of the challenges we face is that, I mean, what is it a lot of people are going to want to organize for? To get back to the good old days of Joe Biden. And, you know, I don't think that's really an option. So it's going to take work to try to talk to people about what the stakes are, because we, you know, I don't know if you read or saw that 2024 is on track to be the highest emissions year of history. So, yeah, you know, it's not only that we're not succeeding at meeting our targets of reductions, it's that it's still continuing to increase. That's happening under this regime. Obviously, Trump could accelerate it. But, you know, I think that what you're looking towards in your... you know, high school career is going to be a situation in which, you know, a lot of the easy answers are not going to be available on the table. You know, it's not going to be like, well, there's this trajectory where you just get a job and it's easy and comfortable. I think it's going to be faced with a lot of deep questions. You know, we talked before about AI and like, well, what do we imagine in terms of like what's going to be available for employment? Like what kind of jobs that make sense? And I think this is going to be another an overlay on that. It's going to be this sort of, you know, tech bro driven utopian vision. And I think that's something else. Maybe we can kind of wrap up with this, which is that you're a young, you know, I think you identify as a young man. You know, you have mostly European ancestry. You're tech and
STEM
oriented, and science, math, and tech. there's a lot of people in your demographic who are kind of the base for Trump and Elon Musk and all this. I mean, can you sense any of what makes that attractive to people?
I'm just completely so, like, outside of it. I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really... Maybe they think that we'll just tech our way out of this, or, like, they've bought into the thing of, like, oh, we'll just green energy, we'll just do this, you know, everything will be great.
Yeah.
We can tech our way out, so we can tech solution our way out of this. We got these new sodium batteries that are powerful.
Yeah. This idea that kind of humans can reach for the stars, and what we need to do is liberate the innovation. We need to liberate the creativity and have the great minds, and, you know, not have all of this diversity, you know, equity kind of stuff getting in the way of great white, young white men, you know, creatives solving the problems of the world, right?
Gotta flee to Mars.
Right, gotta flee, gotta make life interplanetary or whatever.
I'm just like, what I find is weird was like, terraforming Earth, I'm just thinking, like, why would we try to terraform Mars when it'd be just objectively easier in all ways to just fix any problem on Earth?
It would be so much easier, and it's...
To an extraordinary degree.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a slogan that has been around for a while, but I think really has some deep truth to it, and this is something I think is really relevant to where we're at right now, which is that it's easier to imagine the end of the world than the end of capitalism. You're familiar with that?
Yeah, I've heard that.
And what that means is not just like a failure of imagination, because of course, like in some, you can write a sci-fi story that's got the end of capitalism or something, but the machinery of capitalism is so deeply rooted in our every practice, and we're so familiar with the constraints that come up where, the usual kind of drive of profit motives and yearly earnings and all this, right?
Most people are saying, oh, we can't do it, it's too expensive. I'm like all these things being too expensive, and I'm like, well, it doesn't have to be. Like, nuclear reprocessing.
Yeah.
The two biggest issues are both just, like, stupid capitalist reasons.
They are.
You can make nukes with the byproducts, and it's expensive.
Yeah.
But if you don't have people, like, constantly fighting wars, you don't need to make nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
And if you don't have money as limitations, and people need to make profit, you don't have to worry about costs. And then you can get a lot less nuclear waste and a lot more energy and not have to burn carbon.
You just need to find a way to get the people who have the skills together and coordinated and get the resources, like
the
material resources, and just...
Getting the two resources probably isn't that hard because we have a bunch of wasted... You could just reprocess things. Like, we don't have to do any more mining, really. We could just, like, recycle things.
Yeah.
I can sort of understand that, like, you want someone who's smart to do all the things for you.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be like, oh, this person knows everything. They can do it. They got this.
Right.
They'll get to Mars and save all our problems and stuff.
Right. Well, I think that there's a couple parts of it. I think that part of it is seeing somebody who's heroic, seeing somebody who is, like, you know, a model of having big projects and doing big things. I think a lot of times it feels like the only people that are doing big things are kind of in fictional universes, you know, are in movies, superhero movies, or are in Hollywood or something like that, or, you know, maybe are the alternative to that is kind of engineering, business, but especially that kind of, I think people also, some people who are really kind of into tech stuff, they want to feel like what they're doing is really important and valuable. And this is an environment in which they're lionized. They're the heroes.
People want an Iron Man. People want a Batman. They want a
brilliant, rich person to save the world. And they also feel like that. I feel with you that saying that, like, they want to feel like they're doing something powerful.
They're doing something big. They're part of the movement. They're part of the future.
Yeah.
So they want to jump on the bandwagon of all these, like, people. Like, yes, we're doing something. We got this. We can solve. We can do that. We can be the people that our descendants look to and be like, they did it right. They were the ones.
Yeah. And I think that, honestly, I think that's an honorable core motivation. And so I want to seek out ways to be able to talk to people who are in your position, to talk to young people who are drawn into fields that could, you know, are kind of surrounded by a lot of tech bro energies, you could say. And and be able to kind of provide a different way of being impactful and meaningful and having meaningful work in the world, right?
Yeah, definitely. Sort of like getting people to not be drawn into the manosphere of all these rich people and all these like tech bros, and sort of like being like, no, you don't have to do that. There's other ways.
Right. What are those other ways? We can kind of wrap up with this. What are some other ways that people can lead meaningful lives that the descendants look upon and honor?
Well, like setting up mutual aid networks, or like being good community service people, helping people out, building good community. Yep. Just like being a good person and helping make the world a better place, not to sound preachy about it.
Right.
But like trying to be a good person, I think, is one of the most important things. Like
trying to help people. Because if you, I don't know what the right quote for this is, but sort of like, if you do good things, it'll inspire other people to do good things as well.
Yeah. I think that's true. I think that's really true. And I think that what's also...
Sort of like what goes around comes around.
I mean, I think that's true on many levels. And one of those levels is that people need infrastructure in order to do that most effectively, right? I mean, I think that you can help somebody who needs some groceries moved from their car, and that's great. But there's also a need to kind of set up infrastructure so that it's not always, there's not always somebody there to help that grandma with her groceries. But if you had a system where that was in place, and that requires another layer of effort, right?
But yeah, that also, like, working out building systems, I think, mm-hmm. is also very important.
Mm-hmm. And not just, like,
we'll tech our way out of it.
Right. You know, or maybe there's a reframe, which is that the sort of tech that we need might have some aspects that are, computers and information technology, but have other aspects that are kind of social technology, are about reaching into our hearts, reaching into our care for each other, and being able to turn that into kind of practical infrastructure, right? Like, and also, how to deal with a situation in which it's hard for a lot of people, maybe especially young people, to talk to people about the things that really matter. Yeah. Because this is going to mean talking to people, even if you don't know if they're going to agree with you. It's going to mean being involved in debates where sometimes, you're an outlying perspective, but finding the people that maybe resonate and then doing something and then being able to convince more people that it's a good idea, and also being open to being convinced that other approaches are also good ideas. Does that feel easy for you?
No, it seems very difficult, especially it seems very, very, very hard, but I might not be cut out for it, because I'm not very good at talking to people. Mm-hmm. But definitely that does seem like people that are good at talking to people, people got a high charisma role, to be D&D about it, those people can sort of do it.
Yeah?
I'll be the one in the back making the networks.
You'll be the one in the back making the networks, kind of tech networks?
Both.
Making both? Yeah. Well, it's going to take all kinds, yeah? And I think that sometimes to be all D&D about it, sometimes an intelligence role can make up for a charisma role, and maybe some wisdom goes a long way in all situations.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm actually being correct in my D&D analogies, because it's been a long time, but, honestly, there's all kinds of spaces in which people are organizing, and most of them are not politically coded, right? D&D, as an example, might be a space in which people have a lot of the tools needed to figure out how to organize quests and deal with logistics and relate to each other in a way that self-organizes, right? Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to translate those skills into a very different moment that, it's an intense moment. We might need the ability to have people who are migrants who need to evade these deportations and support them on traveling through a version of an underground railroad.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Like, you got the underground railroad, but not underground railroad, but instead of running from slave catchers, you're running from border patrol.
Yeah, exactly. And that's going to be, you could think of it as a sort of live action role playing. And people joke about that. They're like, oh, they're just LARPing. But maybe that's exactly what we need, is to take the skills and practices that people have developed in a non-political sphere and translate it into a moment of great need.
Yeah, something people can think on.
Yeah. Well, let's just come back full circle to where we began, which is that last night you were around a fire and you were talking to people and feeling through things as it became more and more clear that, you know, the direction things were likely to go.
I was looking good for a second there. We had a sliver of chance. There was... Oh, man.
Yeah, that's kind of the mood, right?
Like, we were so...
Yeah. And there's this dispiriting feeling, right?
And sort of like, we were this close, dang. Oh. Yeah, sort of like defeated.
Right, right. There's such a strong impact, kind of psychosocial, physiological even impact from something that is ultimately far away, right? But a lot of people are feeling really, really impacted. What do you think might be some things that we can do to help people who are going through a lot right now?
Maybe just like giving them like support if they ask if they need anything, helping them out, just giving them some support so they can don't get too overwhelmed, because it'd be probably very mentally taxing. So like supporting people that you think might have been very affected by this.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe
asking if they need, if you want to make them tea, if they want to make them dinner, if they need anything.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe listening if they have words they want to share, and then maybe having a space to not talk. Like, you just pause for an extended moment. Maybe that's exactly what people need sometimes, is a pause, is a space to just breathe and feel.
Yeah.
And cry. Yeah. And scream.
Yeah, it's a emotion-free space.
And a free space feel for emotions. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, as the time is right, to be able to use those feelings as a motivation for action.
Yeah.
Well, Raven, it looks like we will keep paying attention to what's going on. We'll keep listening to what's possible, listening to what our ancestors have done in similar moments in the past and what we can learn from them, as well as what our descendants need from us. And is there any final words you'd like to leave tonight's podcast with?
We'll get through this. We'll get through this. We got this.
Yeah. One way or another, we'll get through this. And sending a lot of care to everybody out there, sending a lot of creativity and curiosity and also grief. This is the Dad Son Revolution Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Good night.